With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
The Score, Behind the Headlines, a new podcast series from The Score's Julie DeCaro and executive producer Tony Gill. Season 1 reexamines the murder of James Jordan after 20 years of shocking revelations.
You have to understand a lot about where it happened.
I used to go down there with a 12-gauge shotgun and a Neapolitan Mastiff.
The Robinson County Sheriff's Office gets caught up in the federal corruption probe. 22 officers were charged with perjury all the way up to drug trafficking.
The Score, Behind the Headlines, the murder of James Jordan. Download the latest episode now on 670thescore.com or radio.com sports.
All right, what's up, Game of Thrones fans? This is Stick to Thrones. I am Tony Gill. I guess I produce this thing. I'm hoping that other producers, the associate producers, will get in on this and help me out here, because I really want this to be a group effort. And I thought it would be a fun project. And here we are again with episode 2 with a whole new crew. Chris Tannehill, producer for the McNeil and Parkin Show, is in the building. What's up, Tony?
Hey, how we doing, Tony? Host executive producer, that's a very prestigious title in the industry. So, you know, only true powerful people can give themselves that title. So don't sneer at that title, Tone. All right, brother Tone, sorry.
All right, Tone. And also the co-host of
Whoa.
I mean, you guys are a pairing, right?
Well, I mean, if you listen to the show. No, yeah. Whatever you want to say. No.
Danny Barkins, ladies and gentlemen. What's up, Danny?
What's up, Tony? I was so upset that I couldn't come on week one, man. I'm thrilled that you're doing this. I think that the podcasts that you've been doing with the Bulls and with Julie, with the Jordan father murder thing, and now this, I think it's awesome, man. So thank you for inviting me on.
Yeah, this is once you're passionate about something, you just kind of, okay, I want to dive in more and explore more into it. So
absolutely,
yeah, this is going to be a fun show, and maybe we do other shows.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I think it'll be a great thing. But Game of Thrones episode 2, let's jump right into it. Your overall thoughts, guys.
Go ahead, Tanny.
Okay, so you know, I am not the most hardcore of Game of Thrones fans. I enjoy it very much. I think it was Vox had a piece, the 10 episodes to rewatch before the new season launched. And I've cycled through those 10 episodes, and I've seen the series in its entirety. And I enjoyed the episode. There's a lot of pushback about this episode because there's no deaths.
Yeah.
That was a weird thing. I didn't realize until I read it after the fact, because I thought it was so strong, just the dialogue and the character relationship. So there was no deaths. People didn't like that, apparently, and, you know, there was not enough violence and gore for people, which I didn't agree with, because it was pretty clear, if you want to call it a setup episode, whatever, a lot of people are saying that's fine, but it's clearly, they're laying the foundation for what's going to be a bloody and horrific final four episodes.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I don't need the show to have gore and violence the whole time. I thought the show was maybe a product of two things. One, that it's beyond the books, right? We're now in a world past where George R. R. Martin wrote the books. So it's now in the hands of the showrunners. And it's so popular that it's got casual fans watching the show, right? Like, there are Game of Thrones people who have watched the show over already multiple times. There are people who have read the books. And then there's people like my wife who've only seen the last two seasons and are just like kind of hopping on board with it, and they never saw it early.
Right. Or Shep, who's about to start watching when the bloodiest episode of all time is about to come on.
And that's just a radio gag because I think it's going to be funny. But like, so I thought that last night's episode or episode two of season eight, depending on when you listen to this podcast, was, it was almost like for the casual fans of like, oh my God, this show has gotten so popular. In case you haven't been with us for the whole ride, we need to remind you about tension between Jaime Lannister and Bran, Jaime and Lady Brienne of Tarth. Like, there were so many reunions and like people that had, were talking to each other to reiterate like why things mattered to people that inevitably when they die, you want people who are just catching up to have an attachment to those characters. So I thought it was setting up to pull at our emotional heartstrings for death.
Yeah, it, there's a lot of storylines that they have to tie up in six episodes. And there was a bunch, because at the beginning of this whole story, this whole journey, there were many, many, many strings leading to different places, and they're all kind of woven and connected. And now they're in two spots. They're either in King's Landing or they're in Winterfell. Everybody that matters are in two spots, and it simplified the entire story. And I thought they did that very well, because that can be extremely difficult when you're trying to character develop the peaks of all those characters into six episodes.
Well, it was crazy, right? We got no Lannister storyline, right?
No. Like,
there was shown, not really, I mean, mentioned kind of at the beginning. But, you know, it was funny because, you know, people will talk about, you know, the show and, you know, an episode like this, you know, just I don't think HBO would spoon feed people like, you know, a reminder of like who they should be, you know, rooting for or liking or remind people about characters and their relationships. I think just logistically, I mean, you're possibly going to see the end of their civilization. So this could seriously be the last time that they have to show any time for any type of interhuman communication.
Sure.
Because it's all going to be war for sure, at least the next episode. And there's not going to be much side dialogue like, you know, hey, remember that thing we were talking about two seasons ago? Well, that's still a thing, and this is not a thing. Meanwhile, people are dying in the background. So I think this is just their last chance to do a little housekeeping of personal relationships. So.
I actually thought Barstool Big Cat had a hilarious tweet. He said it was like the locker room was mic'd up before the Super Bowl.
Yes, I saw that.
Which
that
I actually thought was a perfect way to describe what that was. It was like everybody was getting all in their feelings.
Yeah.
Like everyone was handling the preparation differently.
Yeah. And I'm not really for that type of like storytelling that just wrap everything up in a kind of neat little kind of knots as much as you can before all hell breaks loose in the very next episode. But they did it really well, and I was kind of entertained throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, I am so invested in these characters that I don't need it to be action the whole time.
Yeah.
I love the dialogue. I love the deception. I love the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love the scene.
That was my favorite scene in the episode, which I'm sure we'll get to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when they're all in the room around the board and they're planning how their defense of the attack.
Yeah.
Like, I was just thinking about...
I did have a problem with that scene, though.
Okay.
We'll get to it.
I mean, real quickly, there's no snacks.
Good
like,
point.
No one provided snacks.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big meeting. You want everyone to be, you know, make sure everyone's got a little something to nosh on while you're talking about the future of civilization. I think I saw some ale, you know, lingering about, but no snacks. You know, Mitch would have had snacks.
Mitch would have had snacks.
Yeah. So if it was House
snacks,
Rosen,
snacks,
if it was House Rosen, we would have had snacks there. That's for sure.
Come on, Khaleesi.
They dropped the ball.
Can you be a benevolent queen for once?
Her dumb dragons were eating everything.
Whatever they want.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. But I was thinking, like, man, how much fun must that scene have been to film? Right? Mm. No way all of those characters have been in a single scene together.
It's
right?
Like, it's like it's like Livia's funeral in Sopranos. Spoiler alert. It's like you don't get, or Christopher's intervention. It's like all the characters in the series there for the one scene, and you really only see it once or twice throughout the entire series. So I didn't even think about that. But it's like TV magic there when everyone is there for a common cause.
Even Arya, who's been out, because Arya is my favorite character. I don't know about you guys, but okay. So this was a tough episode for me.
Yeah, we're gonna get to.
Oh, I mean,
we're gonna talk about.
Is there a rundown? Do we have a rundown? Okay,
yes.
my bad. You're the host. I thought it was more free flowing. My apologies. We'll follow your lead. Go ahead.
Before we get to starting from the first scene of episode two.
Wow, we're going scene, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, we have to. The reason why I love this show is I hate wasted lines and I hate wasted scenes. There's little to none in Game of Thrones throughout for me. Everything mattered at some point in the season, except for that one singing scene with what's the guy's name?
You're the host.
You're
the host.
That's not Gendry. No.
He's super famous. He enjoyed the show and he just wanted to be on the show. So they gave him an entire Ed Sheeran. I didn't need that at all. I'm like, what are you guys doing?
Oh, I thought you were talking about the guy who sang the song.
That's what I thought.
In this episode.
Ed Sheeran.
I was like,
oh, guys, you could just made him like a soldier. Like you made the...
Noah Syndergaard.
Noah Syndergaard. Or the guy from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, they've been giving a lot of cameos.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, R.P. Well, they could have done that. But there was
a cool cameo in this episode, which is of course the former CIA director.
Yeah,
David
I just
Cohen.
Read that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, David Cohen was in it. The CIA tweeted out a screen grab before the episode. I was like, oh, it was like the first thing I saw about the episode before I watched it. Uh-huh. And they actually showed a screen grab from it. And I was like, I don't know, is this real or what?
Yeah,
it was real.
That's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
That's weird.
I didn't know. That
it's
is
rare,
weird.
Like an on-screen, like, you know, face shots, for lack of a better term, you know, because a lot of them, like, you know, the guy with Always Sunny had the quick shot right to the eye, and that was it. Noah Syndergaard didn't even see his face, so this was like one of the rare, which is like full on. Granted, I don't know how many people would know it was him.
Yeah, I didn't.
Had the CIA not tweeted it, I wouldn't have known it was him. But that was like probably the biggest name cameo of this episode.
Yeah. Before we get into the details of the episode, the experience watching, I've watched it live. From the start. Danny, you watch it the day after.
Only recently.
Okay.
I've watched it live from the start, the whole show. But now, because I do this national show on Sunday nights on CBS Radio, they when I agreed to it, I thought that the biggest inconvenience was going to be the end of Sunday Night Football.
And, you had no idea.
And I didn't even think about the I considered asking for vacation because there's no text line on the national show. They like you to take calls, but if you want to have any other interaction with people who are not calling a radio show, you need to have Twitter.
Ooh.
So I've had little things spoiled. Both of these episodes, it's impossible not to.
It's the absolute worst, because I was trying to watch the series in full by the finale of the last season to catch up with my wife, who had seen it all and was raving about it. And I on Twitter, I muted hashtag Game of Thrones, hashtag GOT. And then you go now, and you know, I still have all those things muted, you know, even though I know, don't even check your phone after 8 o'clock because someone's going to tweet something. And now you got hashtag Dem Thrones.
Yes.
Demons, I see you out here. You almost ruined something for me last week. So now you literally just can't go on the internet, which is totally fine by me. But
well, and you've got pop culture sites that aren't even using hashtags, and they're just in it for the GIF game.
Yeah.
Right. They're just in it for the retweet game to show how quickly they can turn stuff around.
Yeah.
So like I saw the
they want to make things memes before they even have a chance to be, that's
the name of the game now on social media.
The Jon Snow Daenerys kiss with him
with
like
the dragon?
Looking over his shoulder I saw that instantly it's terrible.
It didn't make it feel better once he was like, oh, I know where.
No, it's awful. Because like even if you don't, but last night I just saw someone who I follow who tweeted about an Arya sex scene. And I was just like, no! I was more than that. But I didn't know anything. I was like, what, who was it with? Was it forced? Was it, is she of age? I was just like losing my mind while talking to Michael Lee from The Athletic about the NBA playoffs. Like, it was so terrible. And then I wake up on Monday morning, and you know, I'm not a morning person. I don't have kids. I have no real responsibility. So it was, Game of Thrones is intense at 8 in the morning.
Yeah.
That's an intense way to start your day, man. So like I'm not enjoying this. And I'm going to be in France for the finale.
Ooh.
So yeah.
Excuse me.
I know.
Watching it from a castle, are you?
First world problems, I know. But if you want to talk about the experience, I am not enjoying my experience of watching it.
It's how many things are there of like this where we're all together on something? What, Super Bowl?
You mean outside of sports? Because there's a lot in sports.
Okay, yeah. Live sports.
Not even really in sports. I mean, Bears games we're all in on, but, you know, baseball, not everyone's a Cubs fan. You know, most people aren't Sox fans. So, like, there's not a whole lot of unity there. I mean, it's not really – and then you have Super Bowl, but it's mostly football.
Yeah, football.
And Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Yeah, and State of the Union addresses.
Right. The Academy Awards.
Yeah.
Like, but I guess, like, if you curate your social media feeds, like, if that's the definition of all of us watching together, right?
Yeah.
Like, if – Warriors Rockets in the second round, like I'm really excited for, right? Say that gets to game 6 or game 7.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Everybody that I follow, for the most part, you know, using everyone not literally, using it figuratively, like will be watching. So I do think that there are still some shared collective experiences. What's unique is for it to be a television show. Because now there's 600 channels and there's all these different
and streaming
options.
Yeah. And appointment and television is not as important versus I'm just going to watch it later.
Well, yeah, exactly. And if it's on a network that's not HBO or Showtime, and so there's commercials, almost no one watches it live.
Yeah.
Like when Better Call Saul comes back, I won't watch Better Call Saul live.
Yeah,
even if I watch it that night, I'll record it and then and start it 20, 30 minutes after to fast forward the commercials.
Mm.
Like my wife's a big Bachelor fan. A lot of people do watch it live, but that's a 3-hour show. It's insane to watch that without fast forwarding commercials. So There's really not a lot of this left in terms of scripted TV dramas.
I'm worried about what is HBO going to do after. I mean, I know they got like the prequel, you know, planned, but this just feels like I've never been more interested in what strangers think about something.
What's the best show
you
guys have ever watched live? Is it this one?
I think it's this one for me.
No, for me it was final season of Sopranos.
Okay, so you caught up and watched final season of Sopranos live.
For the final season, I caught up for that, yeah.
Okay, I watched Breaking Bad start to finish. And I still have Breaking Bad ahead of Game of Thrones on my all-time rankings. But, yeah, this is the second best show I've watched live and was in on the ground floor. Was in from season one, episode one. And it feels kind of good.
Yeah, the Breaking Bad, the Ozymandias episode is probably, as far as live television viewing experiences, is probably, there's nothing like it. Not even like on the Blue Comet episode of Sopranos. I think that singular episode of Breaking Bad, when you're watching it live, is so just gut-punching and just, oh, it was ridiculous at the time. So, yeah, this is up there, though. This is going to be an event, and we're only, you know, two episodes in.
Yeah, I mean, and next week might
next
be
week
the Ozymandias equivalent of it, right? Like, that's what they're setting it up for.
That's the top of the mountain, you think, for, like, television?
I don't know.
At least...
I don't know where they go. I think you're talking about possibly two full episodes or, you know, a true battle in the first episode. It could be just a feeler. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. White Walkers could come out just to feel and, you know, retreats. You know what I mean? Like, you never know what's going to happen. It's like there's a lot of strategy. They made that clear last night. There's a lot of strategic elements to this,
at least from one side. Isn't it called the Battle of Winterfell?
Of Winterfell,
I think episode 3 is titled Battle. Okay. So if they pump fake the Battle of Winterfell,
it would be a total HBO thing, though.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, there's been leaked news that this is going to be the longest fight scene in television and movie history.
I saw that. Is that a verified Twitter account?
The Game of Thrones facts thing?
It's my mom that's been tweeting it.
Okay.
But I to kind of refresh myself, like one of the episodes that was on that top 10 list was the Battle of Blackwater Bay, which I watched over the weekend, and just so amazing. And if they can even come close to that, like, it's going to be a truly amazing hour and a half or whatever it is of television.
I was a Battle of the Bastards guy.
I mean, that was epic.
Yeah. I got to go back and watch that one too. Dude. Yeah,
the show. I mean, it's a remarkable achievement. Just like the production budget and the cast and the size and the special effects. I mean, these are movies.
Yeah.
They are it's movie level quality production every single week.
Maybe that's the next step. If somebody wanted to, okay, let's put out a movie in theaters.
I don't know, man. I think part of it is that we're live and we all have big HD TVs with decent sounds, that it's just they want you to be watching it on demand at home, because that's the way that the most people in this day and age, with everything being so splintered, can get to.
Yeah, just the whole being at home thing, the intimacy of being in your home in your most comfortable environment, like that, they want that connection with you. So it's gonna be hard to top.
Okay. All right, let's jump right into the episode.
Can't believe you're making me wait to talk about Arya. Go ahead.
Jamie.
And you love structure, too.
So yeah. I do. I'm sorry.
You just want to know when we'll be talking about it.
So exactly.
Just tell them right now when it's going to be. It's going to go by a lot smoother.
Jamie meets the court and is questioned on his intentions and all of that. Jamie is a character, I think, for me, has had the most character changing for me. From where he was, where everything was about him, he only cared about himself. Now he seems to be caring about other things other than himself. And it really showed when Brienne of Tarth stood up for him. And she's like, hey, I know him personally, and I vouch for him. And then everything's cool. Daenerys didn't seem like she liked any of that.
No, man, I'm thinking about your claim with Jaime being the one who's had the most arc or change. I might go Sansa. I mean, she was basically a sex slave, and now she's one of the few favorites to sit on the Iron Throne at the end. Like, she's had an incredible up.
Arya, too.
She's gotten too cocky for me.
I'm not talking about likability.
Yeah,
but just in terms of highs and lows over the course of the show.
Well, I mean, Jaime's highs and lows, I mean, it's really the most roller coaster like, because it's not like a linear trajectory, because you know, started high, dipped down low, and now you're sort of seeing the redemption path. Like, I don't think there's anyone in the series that has that sort of path where they're where they've been to the highest of highs, lowest of lows, and all of a sudden trying to build themselves back up. I think that's what makes his character so interesting.
And the confidence to stroll into Winterfell like, you guys just didn't go to war with them, just cool, just on a horse. All right, I'm here. Let's see. And it's literally like one of the worst spots to be in if you're Jaime.
Yeah, he feels, right, in theory, that he saw the dead. He was actually moved by it, right? Cersei clearly wasn't. Her plan is to deceive and wait for the after effects. And so he's like, we're all dying. I may as well be, I'm a warrior. I may as well be with the people who are actually fighting the war. So I thought it was logical, but I absolutely thought, we're getting to crunch time, right? A lot of high-profile characters are going to die. I absolutely thought there was a chance that he was killed in that scene to open the episode.
I mean, realistically, I think probably should have been.
Correct.
You know, if all things are true, and you know, he got in front of the court there, and in the crimes he committed, especially against, you know, Daenerys's father,
correct,
he probably should have been killed, but he got vouched for. It was a lot like another Sopranos thing. It was like a mafia sit down in that scene, and you know, Daenerys kind of got ruled against in that sit down, and
she's not happy about it. Yeah.
No, she's not.
That's happened a lot with her, where people. She's supposed to, and I think that's maybe a little bit of foreshadowing, is like, people aren't really taking her, well, at least in Winterfell, I should say, people aren't really taking her seriously there. Like, I mean, okay, but I don't know if you can be, like, queen.
Well, she's got the dragons, so she should win, but...
But they got icy dragon.
They got the icy dragon.
Let's do the dragon math on that. You know, they got the cool dragon.
That's true. They do have Death Dragon.
It's a cute name that they chose for it, but Death Dragon. That's adorable.
I'd bet against her, right? It doesn't feel like she's the winner.
No, I definitely. Mm-mm. And she, I think she kind of knows it too. We'll get to the final scene, or the second to last scene, but you know, I think we are on the slow roll here, but they're going to have to accelerate it a bit. But they're on the, you know, Daenerys is going to find herself isolated and hated like her father was.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think she's kind of, she's willing, you know, whether she's willing part of it or not, but whether it's intentional or not, she's getting ruled against in mm-hmm. every single way. And she's just finding herself, you know, secluded on her own little island. And I think it's not a good path trajectory wise here for Daenerys. So.
I mentioned this on last week's episode that she has learned only one way to rule, and it's through force. And it's weird because what? She was the breaker of chains and the freer of slaves. She had that trope going about her, and then all of a sudden it's just, look, get down or lay down, basically. And that's
her
only.
Yeah, I have dragons.
Yeah, I have dragons. Do what I say. And that's really not how this goes if you want the trust of the people that you're trying to rule over. You just can't do it with force. You have to have a gentle hand at some point. And you're like, and she's like, no. I have a right to this throne. I have dragons. Do what I say.
We also have to get to the point where Jon Snow told her.
Yeah.
That,
yeah. Yeah. From that very first scene, it's still weighing on Jon. He's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, we need more people anyway. Like, he's thinking about this.
Yeah,
like, how am I going to break this to
her? She's the mother of dragons and the understander of concepts. Because the fact that she's like, wait, that means you're the rightful heir to House Targaryen. And you're the last male heir. And you're going to have true claim to the Iron Throne. Oh, thanks, Daenerys. Really, there's no flies on you, m'lady.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. It felt like they were whiteboarding a ton of stuff in this episode. It really did.
Yeah. Moving on to different scenes. Arya, not the sex scene, but she goes back and gets her thingamajig. What's that?
The dragon clash spear thing.
Oh,
I love this scene.
Really?
I do. I think there's crazy foreshadowing in this scene because she asked, I got the name written down here, Gentry, to make her weapon, and he's kind of dragging his feet on it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, come back around later, finally gives her the spear with the dragon glass, and she says, this will work. I think there's some foreshadowing there, and we know about Arya's history, the shape-shifting, and she can, you know, she can kind of conform and hide and be stealth about it. I think ultimately she's going to be the one that's going to have the fatal shot to the Night King. I think that's going to be something to watch out for, because she says that'll work.
If that happens and it gets spoiled for me, whoever spoils it for me will be my sworn enemy.
Okay.
I will never forgive the Twitter account or friend or relative. So if you want to be on my bad side, Tanny, it seems like something you might do now that I've given you the blueprint. But yeah, I'm with you. And we need it. We mm-hmm. need the badass Arya takes out, like, 500 White Walkers on a ratio of 500-1 scene. Like, we've been through so much with her, and she was gone from the show for like 2 seasons, it felt like, where she was almost never there. We deserve to see this badassery in its full-fledged form in this battle, so I am very optimistic.
I think the show may have tipped their hand, because I thought that too.
Mm-hmm.
When she's asking about specific details about the White Walkers,
what
from
are they like?
Gendry, what are they like?
Yeah.
What do they smell like? You know, what do they look like? Those details are needed for her to do her mini face thing. And I think that's how she gets to the Night King. Because they said later on in the battle scene, well, he's not going to expose himself. He hides behind the crowd. So how do you get in there? Maybe she kills a White Walker, takes the face, changes, do her thing, gets close to him, kills him.
Yeah, it's definitely reasonable to connect those dots, because in a show where everyone is entitled based on bloodline, family lineage, mm-hmm. and just on name alone, she's actually put in the work, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To become this warrior. And I think as far as, like, you know, redemption paths, mm-hmm. like, you know, she's certainly high up there. She's a lot of people's favorite character, like we just talked about. Mm-hmm. So I think it's all there for her to be the last one standing.
She's also slow playing it all. Like when when John asks, like if in the first episode of the season, if she's had to use the sword, and she's like once or twice.
Yeah,
she's not always there. Uh-huh. When he comes back and he asks Sansa, "Where's Arya?" and she's like lurking. She's always lurking. Sansa knows what she's capable of, right? Like some people do, but not everyone knows. Like Daenerys, clearly, not that we've seen, Daenerys has no idea what Arya's capable of.
Or any of them,
That's by design.
She doesn't really know what Jon is capable of. She just knows that she loves Jon at this point in the story. She doesn't know what Sansa has been through and has gone through.
I'm talking about in battle. Like when the S hits the fan, like I don't know if we're cursing on this podcast.
It's fine.
Okay, yeah. But so like in that scenario, she's the most underrepresented. Yeah, well, absolutely.
Because he's tiny.
Well, that
and she looks like a child.
Her training. Yeah, everyone in the show just lives off reputation, their title, their bravado. That's most of like what they're selling to people. You know, like you know that strikes fear in people when you say, "Oh, I'm the Kingslayer." Like that, there's a mystique to that. Mm-hmm. But with her, it's just, you know, just the training and that's it. You know, like she's just on the grind out here. You know, like with the many faces. So it's a different deal with her, different motivation. So perhaps it's by design.
All right. Moving on to the next scene, Bran and Jaime meet up.
Awkward. Am I right, guys?
Yeah. Really, really awkward.
And we got to go back to the first scene though for, you know, the things we do for love. One of the best lines of the entire series.
Yeah, that was a bar.
When Bran throws that back at him, that hot fire. Like everyone should just went, "Oh," but no one knew what he was talking about, so you can't really do that. But certainly everyone was like, "Oh." But that was great.
Yeah,
so.
If you guys are just now watching the scene, Bran was paralyzed by Jaime.
I don't think anyone's listening to this podcast.
Literally, if you haven't gotten to the first episode yet, but have somehow decided to jump to season 8, episode 2,
and 30 minutes into this podcast,
So after he's paralyzed and this happens, and you know, you go through 10 years worth of stories, but I think most people remember that, but if you don't, it was just a brilliant, just like they sat on that line for years and they weave everything for this scene to come together for that moment, and boy was it well executed. Well received in my house.
It was
I gave a laugh.
Approved it, yes.
I gave a laugh.
But they have their meet up after, I mean, he assumed he was dead, right? In medieval times. Like what paralyzed person lives that long?
Oh, of course.
even with maesters, you know, right. Like there's no way, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and
that was
here,
the shock at the end of episode 1. Yeah, he was seeing Bran.
Here he is, and he's thriving, and he's become this thing that everybody seems to kind of know, but don't really know, and don't really ask him questions about it. I would be asking all the questions.
Well, except who did ask the question? Tyrion.
So
Tyrion not only asks him the question and we don't see the full conversation, but then the next time Tyrion talks is when they're all being pessimistic about they're gonna die.
Yeah,
when they're drinking the wine and Tyrion just, I think we're gonna win.
Yeah.
So I don't fully understand what Bran is capable of.
Yeah, we don't know how much he knows and how far down the road he can see. But clearly,
can he see in the future? That's what I'm struggling with, though.
Yeah, I thought so. That was
I'm pretty sure he can, right? And
it's not just small snapshots, maybe of what's in the future. You know, like not the entire story, how to get there, but I think he can definitely see at least through the end of the battle, which is not that far in front of them. You know, like in terms of time.
And he had one really ominous line in the episode that I'm forgetting, because that the Tyrion thing was, oh, maybe he talked to Bran and he got optimism, but Bran also said something
about erasing time. They want to erase time.
That was a bar right there.
Yeah.
But
hey, Bran was just spitting hot fire.
He really was.
But I mean, he seems cool with being like what happened with Jaime.
Yeah.
Well, no.
Well, he knows what's going to happen is going to happen. You know, there's so much more at stake than to worry about that.
Yeah,
I think,
there's
for
an
him.
Understanding, I think, on Bran's end. Like, look, in order for me to be my truest self, that kind of had to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I thought that the explanation he gave was the truest one, was that they need him. They're not, like, Jaime asked him, why didn't you tell them what happened? Mm-hmm. we need you.
Right. That's what I said. Yeah. I remember saying that to my wife at the time. Like, there's a little foreshadowing there, too. Mm-hmm. You know, like when I ask how far does he see in the future, he knows for a fact it's not just like anecdotally, hey, man, we need you out here, buddy. You know, you're a Kingslayer. But it's like, no, we actually need you for this. So I think there's something there.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely what it is that he says, you know, not only are they undermanned, but he's a warrior. He's a Kingslayer. He's a plus war player, right? Like he's not just some jamoke, and they're like, oh, I'm not a soldier. I'm eating this soup. What do I do? It's Jaime Lannister who's now fighting on their army. Like he thinks if I tell them, they're going to make the decision based on emotion, and they're going to execute him.
Is that tough for Bran? Like knowing all of this, but if you try to explain it to people, they will not understand, and they will be even more confused.
I can't imagine that the character who's paralyzed in medieval times, who can see the past and the future, has an easy life. Yeah, I would imagine Bran has a tough day today.
But you know what? Speaking of that scene, Bran also told him, which made me think, oh, Jaime's definitely going to die in the next episode, is that Jaime was like, okay, well, we'll figure everything else out after this. And he's like, how do you know there's going to be an after this?
That was the ominous line I was thinking about.
My thing is, was he in referencing the entire group or just him?
Who knows? That was exactly the ominous line that I was thinking of, and we don't know. But it was definitely foreshadowing of something negative, either for humanity, the masses, the living, or who he was talking
to. You know what? When you guys just brought up that Bran made a point to say that, no, we actually need you. I don't know if you guys seen the last Avengers movie.
No.
Okay, there's a scene where Doctor Strange has to view every possibility on how they win that battle. He found the one, and still people died and people had to go away. But that was the one thing that he saw. The one possibility for them to win was everybody has to die, or these specific people have to die in order for us to win. And when Bran said that, and you guys just mentioned it, it made me think of it that maybe Bran saw the only possibility for them to win is to keep Jaime here. He may die, but his death may help in the long run.
That's a common thing, right? Casualties of war. Mm-hmm. Right? That's just a thing. There's cost of war. The imitation game where they crack the code of in World War II. Mm-hmm. They don't save the ship that they know is about to be bombed when they crack the Nazi code for the first time, because that would give off that they've cracked the code. So then they have to use it incrementally over the course of time. So that, I mean, to your point, that absolutely, he could be looking at it as, sure, it's just, this guy showed up out of nowhere, he paralyzed me, I don't really care if he dies in the future, but oh, by the way, we need him.
Yeah. Well, I was just wondering, what happens to Sir Jaime if he becomes one of the White Walkers? I mean, does he keep the cool gold hand? Is that
excellent question?
I've been thinking about it this whole time when you guys are talking. I can't stop thinking about his cool golden hand, and if that just freezes over and he loses this coolness, or perhaps it gets emphasized.
Yeah,
you know,
I think we've seen peak Jaime, and I think that means it's time to die. And I think Brienne kills him.
Brienne kills him?
I think Brienne kills him. I think he turns into a White Walker. We've seen Jaime has fully transformed his character at this point, knighting Brienne.
We closed the book on Jaime.
He's looked on
favorably. He was literally the most hated character early on, and now people are just like, all right, you know, chapter book closed on
you. And now you die now.
Yeah.
And then I think it's just as if he's like trying to fight on to his humanity, and he's like, just kill me while I still have my own thought process, and Brienne is the one to do it. That's just my
Or possibly theory. Give him an honorable death before a White Walker gets to him.
Yeah.
You know, that's what she'll do, like, you know, returning the favor of, you know, dignity and when he knighted her.
Yeah.
So that's it's okay.
This theory.
All right, I like the theory. Yeah. I like a tone.
All right.
Brother Tone.
Brother Tone.
All right. Jorah makes a talks to Daenerys, who's having issues with her hand, Tyrion, who's having issues basically with everybody. Tyrion is supposed to be this wise, cunning guy. She thinks he's an idiot and giving her bad advice. In the case of Cersei kind of fooling Tyrion into thinking that she was going to send troops, she ultimately is not. Everybody knows now that she's not helping, and she's just waiting for whoever wins so she can kill off the rest. Jorah, I like him, and I've always liked him.
He's one of my
him.
Favorite characters, yeah, but this scene was not a good look for him, in my opinion.
Really?
Just like the whole, like, you know, kind of sniffing around, like, yeah, I used to be your hand. What's going on? What happened there? Like, I didn't like that element of it because Jorah is one of my favorites, just honorable, just, you know, putting the grind down and just, you know, putting his head down.
It is weird he has a thing for Danny, though.
Yeah, how weird is it, though, you think? I mean, you know, it's plausible.
A lot of people have a thing for Danny in that show, right? I mean, she's the mother of dragons.
And I love how we're all just calling her Danny now. That's what Jon Snow called her at the end. He's like, oh, Danny. And I'm sure he said it before, but it was just so cutesy. Like, they're a
pet name.
That's Danny. Silly Danny.
Oh, it's Danny being Danny.
But I thought he gave her some wise advice. Hey, you need to do two things. You're losing it here with the trust of the people in the hand. Even though he has, you know, aspirations to be her number one kind of go-to guy, he understands that maybe Tyrion might be the best for this job.
A true servant, and he's always looking out for the best interests of her, first and foremost, and the realm. So, yeah, that's why... You know, I take back what I said about Jorah. It was a good look for him. Ultimately, at the end of the day, good look.
I'm also cynical on like that sort of thing. Just, they can't kill Tyrion yet. Like, that's just a character you're not killing early. Yeah. Like, he will be a last to die type of character. He's so popular. He's so fundamental to the show. We're just going to execute him for bad advice with Cersei Lannister? No way.
Taking a macro look, I think he's telling this entire story. I think he's the only one that has an understanding of everybody there and how they all fit and they connect. And again, it tipped off their hand when he took an extreme interest in Bran.
He doesn't know Arya. Right? He doesn't know Arya.
Do they have any connection?
I don't think so.
We'll be here all night thinking about who has connections. So that's not my strong suit.
Yeah, no,
mine either.
Mine either. Sorry, moving on.
But I'll
take your word for it.
I'm
pretty sure he doesn't.
But I do think they can't kill him because I think he's just too important to the story.
He's the connector, really.
Yeah.
Like, he's ultimately the one that's, you know, going to either totally destroy or possibly repair relations with King's Landing, you know, like, and he's the one that he's the glue guy right now. So he's critical. So that's why keeping him in the crypt, I think, is going to buy him at least another episode.
Right. He might die, but it's either penultimate episode or final episode of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another piece of advice that Jorah gave, we don't actually hear him say it, but in the very next scene, Dany goes out of her way to have a one-on-one with Sansa. And that's something that we all wanted to see how that went on, because the first scene where they got together, it was not really good at all. And it seemed like it was working out. I even had notes on here. I'm like, oh, okay, they're doing well. They're cool now. And then I had to scratch it out because the scene, the quote from that scene, "What about the North?" came up.
Right. Yeah. They get interrupted and they cut the conversation short.
So that's going to be a thing.
Like, if
a
they win.
Real problem if they win.
I mean, I think if they win, who knows what even type of world it's going to be, if they'll even care about such things like that. You know, you may see just the abolishment of this whole structure.
Right.
You know, like, it's going to be like half, you know, half if you're lucky, half the amount of people left. But yeah, it's certainly. You know, it was pretty catty. You know what I mean? Like, Daenerys needs to stop. Like, you know, she needs to, like, rule. That's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, worrying about those little, the little subtle things that don't really matter in the big picture. Like, you know, I think that's one of those things where just, like, don't even bother.
I mean, signs that she's not fit to rule.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Well, but there's also a real conflict in the show, and it exists with Arya and Sansa against Jon Snow, probably most famously, although I guess Jaime and Cersei also have the same dynamic going on, there's varying degrees of respect for the Army of the Dead.
Yeah.
Like, if you've seen the Army of the Dead and you're a warrior, you respect the Army of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't seen the Army of the Dead and you're not a warrior,
nobody's taking it that seriously.
You're like, eh.
Yeah.
We'll win.
Right.
I'm a queen. Yeah. We got dragons.
They're dead. How tough could they be?
We'll be fine. And so like, when Arya and Jon met up in episode one of this season, and he was like, I'm looking out for this family, and she gives him a hug, and she's like, don't forget it.
Yeah, that's
like because so Arya and Sansa prioritize the Stark family,
yeah,
the Starks over everything.
Yeah,
Jon Snow prioritizes
living,
the living.
Over I like being alive.
Right. Well, but that is still like in fundamental conflict here. Like mm-hmm. Sansa wasting time 24 hours before the Army of the Dead is coming to Winterfell mm-hmm. to be like, hey, once we win this war, who gets this cat? Your castle's gonna be torn down.
But you know what? I mentioned this last week. It's even when they had the meeting and the little girl, the house leader, Jorah's house leader. I love her,
Lady Mormont. That's what we call my daughter. She's about to be five, and she has all the personality of Lady Mormont because you know she's stern, bossy,
yeah.
And she's become one of my favorite characters because whenever she speaks,
yeah.
It's like someone
listens.
Everyone listens. Yeah, so
that's awesome.
Yeah. That is fantastic.
That's a Halloween costume
right
there.
It is. Oh,
yeah. A super deep cut.
That John is trying so hard to explain to them what's coming and what's at stake here. And what they care about is, you gave up your crown to be king of the North. And he's like, I'm trying to live.
Man, but it's respect, right? It's dying with honor. It's keeping your name. Like, that's just that's a trope in cowboy movies, you know what I mean? Like, it's just I won't convert to the dark side in Star Wars, right? Like, dying with honor for warriors is better than any sort of I won't bend the knee type of concession. So that's a trope that movies.
It's just weird. It's based upon impending death. They're still arguing about who's king, who gets control, who has this title, who has that title.
I'd be bending a knee, man. Trust me. I'm with
you. It's so weird.
Oh, you got dragons? Cool. You're my queen.
And Danny does not like that, but they never got a chance to hash it out. So at least we know, I guess we can theorize that at least those two aren't going to die because that still has to be figured out.
Oh, no. I mean,
because I want to see that even when they win or if they win.
I mean,
I want to see how that plays out.
I mean, you could argue that if one of them could die, it can make it very easy to figure out. You know, like, yeah. You don't need both of them because, like, they're kind of in each other's way. So uh-huh. It's beneficial to everyone involved if one of them dies.
Can you imagine if Jon told Sansa before
that he was the true heir?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Jon is a warrior. Jon's a general, right? He's mm-hmm. he's the five-star general. He need to know basis,
uh-huh.
right? Like he's very respectful of his opponent. He's all about strategy, uh-huh. maximizing weapons, men, resources. Like he's the general. He's the one who is by far the best equipped to mm-hmm. understand what's actually. He's like, I don't give a shit about these titles and yeah. this nonsense. Like, keep your cattiness to yourself.
And ultimately, he doesn't want it, but that would make him most fit to be on the Iron Throne.
Well, I thought it was interesting that he told Daenerys, like that he actually shared it with her mm-hmm. right before. I don't know if that's what his justification there is.
I mean, if you got good news, don't you love to throw it in your partner's face despite them?
Yeah,
I mean, it's time-honored tradition between couples.
There
so.
You go. Okay, fair enough. Petty jealousy right before the war. Hey, by the way, Mother of Dragons.
The Theon interrupting and coming back. Reek. What do you guys think about that? Like, I felt like I could have done without Theon, honestly. Like, if they didn't bring him back at all, let's say they forgot him as a character, I don't know if I would have cared.
I think he matters a lot to Sansa.
Yeah, and they showed that with the montage with the song at the end, that their brief little moment together. I think that's basically, we're not going to see much more of Theon after that. I think they wanted to have that one final moment together. You know,
he's reached his peak, so he can die now.
Yeah,
he'll be with Bran. Right?
Yeah.
Well, he's going to protect Bran as best mm-hmm. he can.
Well, good luck with that.
But I mean, he's showed. I mean, people have been complaining about lack of violence. Man, he took over that boat with the axe killing. Like,
yeah.
That was a no joke hostile takeover. Like, I wonder if we're underrating him because we mm-hmm. saw him get castrated and we saw him jump. Like, just because you fear death doesn't mean you're a bad fighter. Like.
Mm-hmm.
He might, I don't know. I think he's got a moment of triumph on the battlefield still to come.
I mean, I wouldn't be mad at that. Like, certainly no one more deserving, you'd say, mm-hmm. in that show. I would mind that, but I think, yeah, you're right. He does have the thing with Bran in the woods, or however they're going to lure out the Night King. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think he'll have a glorious death for sure, trying to set up Bran out there.
I used to respect Theon because out of all the stuff that he's been through and came back from, but when I see the other dudes that have been castrated and how he's handled it, it's like, I mean, other dudes have been castrated. Like, come on, just...
Yeah, but how do you know how you'd handle it? Right? I mean, come on.
I mean, as part
he's
of...
He got dealt a tough hand, man. I think some people play it better than others.
As far as host executive producer of this podcast, Tony's actually got himself castrated this week for this week's episode. So he's handling it pretty well.
He's handling it very well.
Yeah.
Good research. Also, man, I mean, the Unsullied—they're in an army. They were enslaved. This is a man of a prestigious family, right? So he
Ironborn. Come on,
he suffered. He suffered more indignities because he lost more. The Unsullied were—they're an enslaved army who have been castrated. Uh-huh. This guy, you know, Theon, he's attracted to women. He's experienced women. Mm-hmm. He's been in important meeting rooms. Like this man has lost more.
Hmm. Good point. Well,
he suffered tremendous loss of status.
Yeah.
Status.
Status. That's yeah.
Status.
That's what we're calling it.
Status.
Yeah.
And stature.
Moving on. I didn't expect the White Walkers to get there so quickly.
Oh, well, I mean, the next episode. Sometimes you got to remember
like
that it's a TV
day.
Show. Yeah. Sometimes you got to remember it's a TV show, man. There's four left. The next episode's Battle of Winterfell. Like
I'm willing to suspend disbelief on
how long it takes them to travel.
I'm guessing they're real strategic, and they have the best apps on their phones to get there. They have the Waze app for White Walkers. You know,
Waze Winterfell. It never messes up. It never recalibrates.
They don't get tired, so they technically don't have to stop and rest.
Yeah.
Right. They can just keep walking.
Like, quibbling in a show like this about like reality, like, you know, I really don't think the dragons would be able to perform on peak performance with only 18 sheep. It's like, okay, whatever.
And then as they moving on to the big planning scene, the strategic scene that Danny was talking about earlier that he enjoys, the strategy that goes into fighting. I thought they were just going to be like, there they are, go get them. But they actually are planning this out and having them in sections and acting like accordingly.
Although we see most families and houses on the show is pretty archaic in the way they handle their business, as far as strategy goes, you know, they're pretty well advanced for how they strategize these things. You know, like, you know, I think it was pretty cool seeing it. Seemed like looking at their big board, like it looked pretty simplistic. And I was trying to figure out who were the White Walkers on their big board there, the like little pieces that they had.
Right.
But yeah, it didn't surprise me that they have all the details down. And you better have a plan of attack. You can't just go out there like, hope for the best.
I mean, that's basically what they're doing.
And back to strategy, is like, why don't they just have armor suits made of dragon glass? It's like the whole, why don't they make the airplane out of the black box?
Yeah,
like, why don't they make the castle out of dragon glass?
Right, yeah, sure. But I do think people are forgetting, like, we're going to see a different battle this time because they're armed with dragon glass, right? So it should be more
like an equal fight.
It should be more of a fair fight.
Yeah.
Okay. They're clearly still the underdog, right?
Because they're so outnumbered for one. Exactly.
But it should be. But they have strategy on their side. They've got some great warriors. It's not a battle of surprise. They are protected by a castle. And they have dragon glass, and they have two dragons to one.
Mm.
I don't really get how these dragons are going to square off and fight. Like,
it just seems like, okay, two versus one. I mean,
they killed the other dragon so easily.
Yeah.
When the Night King pierced that dragon with that spear,
oh,
I was
dude.
Like, what?
Like, it was the equivalent of like throwing a pencil at a cat and killing it.
I was like, wait, what just happened to that dragon? That's crazy. So, I mean, maybe they're going to be 3-0 here in a second. Like, I don't really know.
That's another thing, too, in terms of how they strategize this is, okay, every person that gets killed on your side, it's not like that's it. There's a strong possibility that they join the other side, and as they consume your army, their army grows.
Right, but aren't How do you kill the dead and stay dead? Doesn't the dragon glass help with that? Isn't that part of the...
That's the
thought process.
That's a question much too nerdy for me to ponder.
Okay.
No, I'm trying to remember the logistics of that.
It sounds like it's a thing.
If the White Walkers kill one person.
Sure, I understand. Right. And that person is dead, and then they join the army of the dead. We've seen that. We saw that in
the Frozen Lake.
Exactly. Yeah. But I'm wondering, but post that battle is the Dragonglass revelation. And I'm wondering Dragonglass keeps the dead dead. Yeah. Or once you're living, and then you die, and you join the army of the dead, and then if you're killed while you're dead, do you stay dead? Like, how many lives do you get? It's like a video game. How many times can you recalibrate? I don't really know. But I assume it's not limitless, endless people, or else then the living has no chance of winning. Right? There's got to be a way to win.
I mean, they may have written themselves into a wall. So, I mean,
I was talking about...
oh my God, we don't have George's books anymore. There's just... To kill them all, they're all dead. They're going to come back to life. What does the book say? Oh, the book's done, idiot.
So I'm interested.
And roll end credits.
I texted my buddy this morning. I was like, what if the Night King just sits on the Iron Throne and everybody dies and it's over?
Yeah. He just walks in to the castle and he kills three or four people standing his way and he just sits there.
Cersei's big monster man bodyguard just dies in one shot because, he's alive and not dead, and then it's over.
Yeah. And is it. Okay, the mountain isn't a white, but he came back to life. John isn't. Is it just the
dude,
fact
no
that...
no one's ever dead.
You're right. That's,
no
it's,
one dies.
It's weird. It's weird.
Everyone's like, oh, I want more violence and more death. You just come back to life.
But in that scene, we also find out what the Night King wants. We still don't know why he wants this, but we still find out what he wants, and is to erase the memory of humankind. And
it's not a bad wish, to be honest.
and I can't remember who said it. Maybe it was Bran. He said that if there's no memory of you, you don't exist. And I thought that was kind of a little bit profound, at least for me. And here's why. Just to go off on a tangent a little bit. Why I got into radio, I think it's because I wanted something to outlast me when I'm gone. Family members, you forget, you move on, stuff like that. I wanted something tangible that will outlast me, because once the memory of me is gone, it's like I never existed. And for me, that, I don't know why it bothers me to think that way. I don't know why I think that way, but that bothers me, and I'm trying to get over it. But
way does radio outlast you, though?
Even this.
You mean like a podcast?
Like a podcast.
So it'll show up online?
I said the same thing about doing mixes or doing the hip-hop shows. One day, I could be dead, could be just old and gray, but someone's going to stumble upon a mix show that I did or, mix project and be like, oh, this is an encapsulation of what this was like in Chicago.
In that era.
Yeah, in that era. So, yeah, I get what you're saying.
So, yeah, I mean, Danny, you chuckled a little bit, I took it that deep.
Danny thinks he's going to be on the radio literally forever. He's going to do the White Walkers postgame show.
I do hope to do that. I would just say it's funny to me, radio's not exactly a medium of, permanence. It goes out into the air and it's gone, whereas a column, in a newspaper stands. So that's more what I was chuckling over, because I often feel like one show bleeds into the next. Stuff's all gone. I'm glad you got into it. And this Game of Thrones podcast will last for all of eternity.
Yeah, hopefully. But yeah, I thought that was pretty cool that the Night King, because of we've seen what happened, why the people of the forest made him the Night King. It didn't seem like he wanted to be that, but that's how it is. And now he's like, all right, I'm wiping everybody out now. He's coming back with a vengeance.
He's not a cheery man.
He is the Night King. He is not.
He seems angry.
Right. And I want to know if he talks or not. You think he's going to talk?
I have no idea.
Oh, God, that would be terrible.
Really?
If they had him talk.
It'd be really corny.
That's the final battle scene, and it's whoever it is, whether it's Arya and the Night King, and,
I am your father.
Where he's like, hey, I'm the Night King. And everyone's just like, what? What's going on?
He sounds like Pat Mahomes.
Right.
Wow, that's really unassuming.
Yeah, I hope that's not a thing. The Night King has like a long monologue at the end. Ugh, that'd be terrible. But I kind of want to see it now.
Right. But I'm very interested in that.
George Martin's just furious.
All right, they now know when they're coming. Everybody's kind of gathering up together and having their last moments, intimate moments with each other. The Wildling guy, I think it's Torin.
Yeah.
Tormund? That dude is hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
And horny.
Oh, yes. He is so funny. Everything he does is funny. He was the perfect comic relief for this all of this seriousness that's going on. He did a perfect job of executing that.
The whole show, they've always been that guy. Like, the Hound was that guy and is that guy. They do a good job. And I do think some shows that are serious dramas lose track of, like, you need things to break the tension sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, impending death, funny line from Tyrion. you need something. This show's done a really nice job. They have laugh out loud lines.
And placing it in perfect spots, too. Yeah.
They do a great job.
I love where Brienne says, you know, just half a cup, and then Tyrion is just pouring it on. It's like a cup's overflowing. I love that part so much.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I laughed out loud during that scene.
Yeah, everybody's having their intimate moments. What was your, out of all the intimate moments and stuff like that right before the final scenes, what was your favorite?
Can we talk about Arya? Is this now the time?
Yeah, we can do it. Yeah.
So this is favorite from the entire episode?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, you mean from, you're saying favorite of the...
Favorite interaction.
Like...
They're knighting him, they're singing the song, the wine's pouring over, of the like imminent death, the penultimate scenes. I just, the Arya scene was so... hard to watch, man.
It was so weird.
But she was still a boss in it. Like, she was asking him his number, hoping that it wasn't zero, because hers is zero, and she wants him to show her a good time. Like, she's still... Wait, I'm not one of those women. Like, I'm not the red lady. Like, take off your own damn pants.
Bloody pants, yeah.
I'm not doing anything for you. You're doing this... for me.
Can we talk about
you made my weapon. You're here to please me. This is my wish before I'm going to go kick ass in this battle, because I'm the biggest boss here and it's the best kept secret in the damn show. I was just like, it was like watching my little sister. Like, I was so mortified.
We saw side boob.
Yeah.
We saw side boob. That was weird for me.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Little upper butt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was weird for me.
It was a lot easier to take in when, like, I had just, it's seen an interview just days, you know, prior, and I knew how old the woman plays
Macy Williams, I think.
Yeah, she's 22. So you got to figure, like, you know, going in, like, okay, it's about to go down. So she was like 20, 21 when they shot this. Like, it's okay. It's not.
She's an adult.
Yeah, it's not something to be squirming about. But a lot of people, you know, and I know it's like, you know, looking at the character is one thing, and you're seeing her as a little girl, but, like, you know, when it's about to go down, you're like, okay, can we be watching this? Like,
right.
No, it's all good. Legally, you can watch it. Yeah. Like, I don't have to have any type of feelings toward it either way, but legally, you're in the clear.
Well, and they didn't make it that graphic, I think, because they knew that just...
people were going to have those thoughts.
People still had them, though. On Twitter, people did not accept that scene as well as maybe they thought when they were writing it out.
Well, I didn't really have a problem with the scene. I just thought, like, the whole show, the actress is beautiful, but, like, you never look at her
in that way,
in any sort of sexualized way, because she's such a badass killer. And not that women can't be badass, she's just, like, she is a warrior, right? Like, Sansa is an effeminate queen leader who's very smart, but she, you know, if it's a White Walker and Sansa one-on-one, Sansa's got no shot. Arya's got this other thing that makes her ruthless. So just, like, seeing her in that setting was just, it was a mind F, man.
Right before her formative years, she sees her father, you know, get decapitated in the town square. And she's on the run every single day after that. And, you know, so that any form of, like, sexual identity or womanly identity is kind of, she doesn't even have that opportunity to form that, you know, because she is so focused on being a warrior, you know, so like, there's no element of that to that character.
I also loved it in the show. A lot of the sex is so male dominant, right? It's it's prostitution, or it's like the early
rape
or incest, or the early Khaleesi sex scenes. But, like, one of the best sex scenes maybe in the whole show is when Khaleesi takes over with what was the Khal Drogo.
Khal Drogo.
Yeah. And like goes on top.
Right.
Like that's one of the best sex scenes, probably the best sex scene in the whole show. This reminded me of that. Yeah. It was like, oh no, we're doing this. Not only are we doing this, we're doing this my way, and this is for my benefit. And I was just, she was so empowered in this. I love her character
You know what I thought? When that scene came on and it really put the pieces together for me in my head, this episode was very socially conscious. And it was weird because, again, we're suspending belief of reality for this show. But I feel like Hollywood may have had an effect, and the fear of pushback about the show had an effect on this particular episode, because we see racism, question mark?
Well, certainly, like,
we see the trope of women can't be knights, and then she gets knighted, and then we see the Arya, a woman, taking control of her sexuality. There was a lot of socially conscious things in this episode that, after that scene, I was like, okay, there was a lot of stuff in this episode, just socially, that I think they wrote in to appease a lot of people before there was any pushback, because there was already pushback, oh, there's too much rape in the show, and women are not, you know, viewed properly in the show. And they just seemed like they just, all right, let's take care of all of this before anybody writes a think piece.
Yeah, I enjoyed that scene with Grey Worm, aka Jose Quintana, when they decide that they want to break out. Like, I think he looks like Jose Quintana a little bit. But, like, you know, I thought about that. Like, you know, there's no one who looks like that around them. So, like, certainly, like, they deal with every other interpersonal issue and issues of the human psyche and relations between people. Like, I'm glad that they handled that aspect when they said, you know what, let's go south of here. Ultimately, who doesn't want to go for a beach? You know, like, yeah, especially compared to where they were. But I'm glad that they had that little moment, because, you know, I certainly was thinking it. You know,
dying though.
Oh, definitely.
Oh. Yeah. There's no way they end up on a beach at the end of the show.
That's like the slowest.
Yeah, I mean, their characters are play. Done. Yeah, their characters are done. What else do you need to see from Grey Worm and her side lady?
You'll see death. You'll see them die.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it is a television show. Like, you're right. Like, the show took a lot of criticism from think pieces online. But, like, come on. It's a show about dragons that takes place thousands of years ago.
Yeah, like, that's why I was like, it felt weird that it seemed like doing this on purpose when it's just a television show.
Well, but I don't know. I mean, maybe it was on purpose. Maybe it's a reaction to that. That's certainly reasonable from the writers. But also, it could just be a sign of, like, the Starks are embracing Jaime Lannister, and right, like, everyone is coming together for the betterment of the living, right? Mm-hmm. They're coming together for mankind, right? So if you want to make a think piece out of it, it's like, hey, we're not all so different, you and me. Mm-hmm. And right? And so sure, there's never been a lady knight, but she's a badass fighter, so let's knight her before the big battle, right? So, like, I think that could be part of it, is that it's just, they're coming together, and the night before they all think they're going to die, they're trying to put their best foot forward.
Yeah, and the inventory, it didn't seem like Arya was satisfied. She was up.
She was fine.
Gendry was like, oh, man, this is great. And she's like, really? That was all?
I mean, kind of symptomatic of the first time, I would think.
Yeah, definitely. But I also think Arya's got her game face on. Arya, like, she wanted to check it off her list.
Yeah,
because because she's very love structured.
What's the rule on that? You guys are more in depth into the sports culture. I know in boxing or in sports, they say, hey, don't go out.
No, well, women weaken legs.
Yeah, is that the same for women? Is that even fact?
Well, I judge everything I know by Seinfeld, where, you know, if you withhold sex from the men, they get smarter, but from the women, they get dumber. At least that's what happened to Elaine Bennis. And really, that's all I have to relate to. That's all I know about it. So,
just from talking to some professional athletes, I don't think that they're often going through dry spells, and they're abstaining before big games. So,
Ask AC Green if you got him on the horn.
Yeah, I that would be a hell of a twist. Battle of Winterfell, and Arya's just stumbling around. She's not for game.
Oh, she's all clunky with her spear.
Yeah, like the bow and arrow's just a little off, and they throw a thought bubble over her head, and she's just like lusting. I will be very surprised if that's how Arya's character goes out.
And then it all comes down to the biggest scene in the show. John finally tells Danny his true origin. And I thought it was executed fairly well. I was standing up as he was telling her. I don't know if you guys had that same experience.
Oh, you don't like getting bad news sitting down?
Yeah,
or something,
no. I got to stand up in awkward situations because you knew it was coming. He was standing next to the, I can't remember his mom's name, Anya. That may be it. We're not experts here, guys.
Whatever. She's not alive. Who cares?
And he's just staring at her. And she's like, oh, who's this? And she knows the story of that Stark, too. Everybody knows that story, apparently, that the Targaryen raped her. Everybody, that's a complete understanding throughout the kingdom that Targaryen raped that Stark. And then Jon tells her. You guys' thoughts as that was going on?
I mean, I was a little... It made for a dramatic moment of television, but I was talking about how Jon Snow is so strategic. Mm-hmm. Earlier, like I didn't really see the upside strategy wise.
Right before,
just like
right before the biggest fight ever.
We can settle this after we win.
If we win.
We need your dragons. We you know what I mean? Like, what if she took her dragons and went home? Like, because it is his right because. As Danny told Sansa earlier, now Jon Snow doesn't know it, but like Sansa was worried about Jon being manipulated by Danny, and mm-hmm. Danny was saying, hey, I'm here at your home fighting his battle. Like, I think Jon Snow is keenly aware that his people have no chance at survival if he doesn't have Daenerys with him mm-hmm. at his side. So him telling her that and risking that, he's got to be really confident that she really loves him because she could just get on a dragon and fly away and leave the Night King to just slaughter all of them. So I didn't think it was
the smartest move
as a tactician. I thought it was maybe poor clock management.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the scene was a little clunky. It was kind of rushed in at the end. And, you know, I thought they could have maybe come up with a better way for her to find out. But I suppose, you know, finding out person to person, face to face from the man you love. It could be, you know, what better way than that, I suppose, if you want to get into
that. It was corny.
A little bit,
It was corny.
It was.
I felt like you needed more proof.
But ultimately, more of a testament to their love for each other. Like, you know, you talk about being a tactician. I think you're just throwing it all out the window. Just like, I'm telling you, like, as a person who loves you very much, this is what it is. Even though, you know, from her perspective, like, you know, it did sound a little far-fetched. Like, your boy told you that.
Right.
So
and
that
your
makes
brother.
It, then your brother. So that makes it so, okay, cool, man. See ya. You know, so I get that part of it, too. But, yeah, it was a little clunky. But, mm-hmm. you know, certainly it opens up the door for you know, I don't know what it could open the door for because with all this blood and guts that we have coming our way, but certainly interesting to see where it goes from there.
My first thought, apparently incest is like just a cool thing. Like in this show, like it's just
we had different
it's
times,
weird,
man.
But it's accepted. Like,
so
I
she's his aunt?
She's his aunt, yeah. And that's that would have been the first thing I went to. Well,
I think that's one of those, that's the elephant in the room, right? Like, they kind of know, like, oh, yeah, there's some incest going on. I don't think it was, like, it's all the rage at the time, and all the kids are talking about, incest, cool, radical. I think it was.
Can I get that drop of Tammy Tammy's podcast,
like,
please?
Like, I just, you know, I think that's one of those things that, you know, it can go without saying that, oh, yes, we definitely had some incest going on.
And especially among royalty, right? Like, that was a thing. So
yeah.
It's like,
I
don't want to mix with the commoners.
That was the whole Targaryen thing,
but there was
thing,
still
right?
the stigma, though, about the incest, like, you know, with the Lannisters.
Yeah.
Like, there was still a stigma, like, you know, the way your feelings about the British Empire aside, it seems like at the time and this time, it was kind of frowned upon. So,
true.
I mean, it was weird because throughout the entire season up until the end that, well, why did Jaime push Bronn out the window? It's because incest isn't accepted. what he witnessed there would not have been okay if he went away and told everybody.
Right, because you're supposed to join houses with another powerful house. You know, like, it's not supposed
to create
to be
a super house.
In-house. In-house. <You know? laughs> So that's part of the whole thing. It's like you bring another two powers together, and they bring their armies and their riches, and you bring in with this house who has their fleet. You know, like it's supposed to be. It's a whole thing. It's a whole production. It's a whole to do with marriages. So yeah, the incest thing. I don't think they thought it was particularly cool. And besides, that's an awkward. You want to talk about not only are you not going to be, the king, you're not going to sit on the Iron Throne, but also, we got some extracurriculars going on. And
I'm
it's
your nephew.
Kind of gross. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
like the Jack Nicholson thing with the mother.
Right. Yeah.
That we're
exactly.
talking about on the show today. But.
So I love the show, obviously. I think the passion has come through in this hour and 15 minute podcast or whatever. But would you guys admit that it's not as good as it was? That it's a little like since it's gone beyond the books and it's more popular, it's more broad appeal. Like
whiteboard this for me. Beyond the books is how many episodes? Like
last season.
Starting last season. Is
last
beyond
season
the books.
Was
okay.
Beyond the books.
Okay,
I didn't like last season. I thought there were too many not leaps in logic, but just that scene's a great example of what I'm talking. A little corny.
Yeah.
Little too clean. Little too Disney, for lack of a better word.
Let's tie up these loose ends real quick.
There's
no slow roll or long play or clever way to find out about it. It was just like, okay, let's squeeze this in before we get to the blood and guts next week.
And we got
to
beat you over the head with it.
Yeah.
You
know, that's what I mean when I said earlier about, like, so that would mean that you're the true
exactly.
Heir. Like that's like, we know. Everyone knows.
And there's been a lot. I feel like there's been a lot of that recently as the show's gotten more popular, which is why this episode kind of offended my sensibilities. But even though I liked it for some of the narratives that, and like I said, I'm so invested in the characters that I don't care. I was talking to a friend earlier today who's a huge fan of the show. There's no ending that could ruin the show for me because I've loved the journey and it's pushed the boundaries of what TV could be, and it's been wildly entertaining. But I don't have a ton of optimism that they're going to stick the landing on this ending. I don't have I'm not that optimistic for a great ending.
Are we going to find out that this show is like they went on for two seasons too long and no one wanted to any part of it? Like after the books part was done, that no one really wanted to, but HBO just threw too much money at it.
Maybe.
Are we going to find that out later? Like how we found out that was basically what happened on Sopranos. Like, you know, they did the extra, half season and, no one really wanted to be, there at all.
Yeah,
but it was just too much money to turn down.
Yeah, and they're making a ton of money, but there's so many characters that it's not the. I was reading an article that like Jon Snow got nearly $500K an episode, and like Sansa's 175, and a lot of them are at 175, but Jon had all these night shoots, and actually, so she wasn't mad, but like, so they're finally making real money from it. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just that HBO they don't have a signature franchise show
anymore,
which is why they split up. Why there was so much time between show seasons, why they split it up, right? It's only a 6-episode final season. Last season was only 7 episodes. They're doing a prequel. I think they've been dragging their feet on it deliberately because George Martin is not caught up with the books. And now they have to end it. And HBO needs to be able to promote Game of Thrones in this era where Amazon and Netflix is getting everything. Like they have the last pillar show. So I don't think HBO's in trouble after this.
They got what? They got Curb, and that's about it.
And they got one more season of Curb.
Yeah.
Westworld was good, but it may have been
a lot of hit and miss on Westworld. People
talk
about
Barry
it.
Gets a lot of critical acclaim.
Yeah, I like Barry. I've seen like maybe halfway through the first season. I dig it, but as far as being a flagship show, I don't think it could be there for them.
Right, John Oliver and Bill Maher still have their audiences, but those aren't flagship cornerstone shows. And so I think the quality has actually decreased recently as it's become more of a mass appeal show and it's become such big business. And I know that's like a hipster thing to say because I was in early and then once they got commercial, they went mainstream and got radio play. I understand that, but it's just, I love the show, obviously. I really do. I'm worried about like cheesy, corny, feel good ending.
What gives me hope is R.R. Martin is still around creatively. Like it's not like, well, you're done with my books. I'll see you guys. Thanks for the money. I'll see you guys later. He's still around. He told them the ending. now they just have to execute his ending. It shouldn't be what the showrunners think how it should end. It should definitely come back to whatever R.R. Martin's mind says is how it ends. That's how it should end.
Although I trust HBO. I mean, they've got incredible writers on it. Like they've got some of the writers that have been on some of their other great shows. So it's in good hands for sure. It's weird for me because the way I've watched it, it was mostly a binge up until the last couple episodes of last season. So yeah. It's hard for me to differentiate like what the best of it was. It kind of all runs together.
That's
like one of the downfalls of binge watching. But now when I go back and ultimately watch the entire series again, which I think I maybe will by the time the last episode ends, like I'll compare and contrast like the other seasons and compare with the beginning of last season. So
yeah, you're going to do that in the next month? You're going to rewatch the whole show?
Well, I've already seen the 10 episodes that they say are worth watching. But yeah, I think I may give it a shot.
Wow.
Just, you know.
That's aggressive.
I did that last season where I didn't watch Game of Thrones until like the third episode of last season. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to start from the beginning. I hate starting from the middle. And I caught up and surpassed it within like a couple weeks or so because I just kept binging it.
Yeah.
So all of it has run again collectively for me.
Yeah.
So it's right. All it's, one giant movie yeah, in
the
my
one,
mind.
One of the few downsides of binge watching.
But it was also a great way to watch it though.
Yeah.
Because I can just hit the next episode.
Exactly.
So this is the first time I have to wait a week for the next episode.
And it's pretty cool to you know the feeling of anticipation in television. It's pretty much gone these days, like we talked about earlier.
Correct.
It's cool to have an event on TV, and you know, just that anticipation for me in my house, like getting Lady Mormont to bed, you know, by hopefully where you can catch it when it goes live on the app. It never happens that way, but you know, it's a cool thing, man. Just seeing it with the world. You know?
It's a hell of an accomplishment.
Yeah,
it really is,
especially in today's era of television and media in general. Like, I can't believe they pulled it off.
I think it'll be something else. Something else will come down the road. I think.
Yeah, there's always something.
Even if it's one, I think that it'll be something.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, I mean, these numbers are
ridiculous.
Yeah, and it is a worldwide thing. It's, you know what I mean? It's it's crossed over.
Yeah, it's not just American.
There'll be everywhere. You know, there are things that'll catch on into the, like, Making a Murderer was a big thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that popped up and was a, The Jinx popped up and was a cultural thing for a while. And if you missed out on it, you were out of the conversation for a minute, but I mean, that's 2% probably of the audience of what this show has been. Mm-hmm.
Do you think they'll have a little crossover element? Do you think like White Walker Robert Durst will come out maybe and just start burping and farting?
Would be interesting. That'd be interesting. But I mean, I really think like the finale is going to be like the NFC Championship game. Like it'll be like 40-50 million people once you factor in streaming and all of the stuff that watch it within 24 hours of the episode dropping. Uh-huh. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's an insane number for a television show in 2019.
I can't wait to see what those numbers look like just throughout the season, how many people watch per episode and in total, because I think it's going to be ridiculous.
You saw the premiere was watched by more people than the Sopranos finale by like 5 million people.
It means nothing.
Yeah, man, this Game of Thrones is a thing. It's a thing, and it's going to be a thing for a long time, and I can't wait till I have kids, and like, when they're old enough, I'm like, you know what show was great? This Game of Thrones.
They got to be like 25, because this show's pretty rough.
And so, Tony, you're going to have kids. You don't need radio. Your kids will be your name that carries on.
But I think that's it. I think we got through everything.
Real quick, cool was the final shot of Tyrion? Top of the castle, looking out like that was a great final shot.
Yeah, you
know, setting up for things to come.
It's a beautiful show.
I had to mention that, like, just before we get out of here, that was just very eerie and creepy and just and just badass all around. Like, it's setting the stage for next week.
Yeah, next week is going to be.
Who do we think dies next week?
Jaime, for sure, for me.
Okay, yeah, I mean, but it's going to be a lot of people.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of
Who's
people.
Who's not going to die, I think, to me, is the more compelling way to look at it. Because, like, you know, you can make an argument for anyone that was in that scene in the castle where, you know, during the knighting scene. Like, any of those people could die.
Easily.
Easily, yeah.
Well, easily.
Because they're all warriors, like, you know what I mean? Like, have been through wars, literally. But they're all smart people. But you know, like anyone could just think one shot, they could just all literally all be dead together.
They could
shoot like an icy arrow into that room the first scene, and they could all be taken out like that. You know,
yeah, so. No question. All right, good point.
Yeah, I think just everybody's trope that is completed and has come full circle. Yeah. I think is gonna die.
Anyone who had a nice tidy ending to their thing. Yeah,
they're gonna die. Yep. The Unsullied, the side lady, Jamie.
I like your case for Jamie. I'll be watching out for that.
They're the redheaded guy who's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. He's done.
But there's gonna be no comedy left. Even if they beat the White Walkers, there's gonna be no one funny around. Except Bronn. Yeah. Bronn's still around in King's Landing, that will be good.
He's got some good lines.
Yeah.
just a future theory. I think Arya survives. I think she kills the Night King.
Agreed.
I think the last person
would be so sick.
The last person on her list is Cersei. I think once Jaime dies, she takes his face, becomes Jaime. Bronn kills who he thinks is Jaime, but it's actually Arya.
Man, I'll see you later.
We're through the looking glass here, people.
I'll see you later.
That's what happens when Tony's host executive producer.
That's ridiculous.
It's just a theory.
I ruined my night.
It's just a theory.
I get out of here with your theories.
Thanks, guys.
Bran kills Arya. It's nonsense.
for checking out Stick to Thrones. Be back next week when the greatest war.
We're going to have a big panel next week,
everybody.
Yeah,
I'm going to have a lot of people in here. So if you guys are available to come back, it'll be great. But it's going to that episode is going to be phenomenal. And I think everybody's going to want in on it. So if you guys have time, it'll be great to have a full board panel.
Thanks for having us, man.
All right. Make sure you guys share, like, subscribe, do all those things. We'll catch you guys next week. Peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.